You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
This podcast is being brought to you by Voyage AC.
Hey, I just ordered us a couple of highballs.
Honey, we don't drink.
Not the beverage, hun. These gorgeous candles from Voyage AC.
Oh.
Should we get a couple of 8-inch ones as well?
I love those highballs. They look great in front of the fireplace.
That's where I was thinking. Mm. Voyage AC has it all. Go online right now and check out their beautiful candles, their incredible fragrances, and gorgeous face and body products. So, hon, how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VoyageEtcie.com.
And you know Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount. I don't like to share it, but she is willing to give it to all our listeners right now. That's 10% off everything you buy.
All you need to do is to enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one. When you make your purchase, Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
I'm Mikel Vega, and I'm the only one in the room that realizes the death of my son was a gift of the infinite. Because of my son's death, I gained the realization of the purpose of his life, and his purpose was to pull me out of a life of destruction into one of truth, of the power of creativity that we all hold within us. And in service to broadcasting and propagating the experience I've had in this realm of truth to others.
Imagine being a Navy SEAL and being deployed to Iraq to serve your country. 22-year combat veteran and Vital Warrior nonprofit founder and CEO, Mikel Vega was set to deploy yet again when he was called to another type of duty, one that allowed him to be closer to his son. But what would you do if that child you love so much tragically died when he was a young adult? Would you numb yourself with chemicals and shut the world out? Or would you heal yourself through the power of different modalities and realize that your son's death might actually be a gift from the infinite?
Hi, I'm Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room. In September 2018, I found myself in an all-too-familiar position. Looking around the room at the other attendees at a famed writer's retreat, I realized that I was the only Black woman in the room. When I wrote about my experience for the Huffington Post, something surprising happened. 24 hours after my piece went live, I had 568 direct messages in my inbox. These were messages from people of all races, ethnicities, creeds, and nationalities who had connected with my piece because they, too, had felt othered. These are the stories we want to share. This podcast is for anyone who has ever felt alone in a room full of people, which is to say that this podcast is for everyone. You're listening to The Only One in the Room, presented by Lipstick and Vinyl and executively produced by Christina Barcy. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to like and leave us a review of your thoughts on the show. And if you have an Only One in the Room story you'd like to share, you can DM us on Instagram at The Only One in the Room. Enjoy the show. Mikel Vega.
Yes.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you. I'm really happy to see you in person.
Yes, yeah. We have an in-person interview.
I haven't looked at my guests for a while, so this is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Question for you. Mm-hmm. Can you give me two songs, one that you use maybe to pump yourself up and the other that you use to calm yourself down?
Well, very interesting because it's all mantra now.
Okay.
So mantra does the same thing at all times.
All right.
Right? So in the past, you know, it's like Tool, Pink Floyd, mm-hmm. Metallica,
yeah,
all these types of things.
Yeah.
You know, the book in the cover. But now it's all mantra, you know, because mantra, when you can tap into the sound current, the seed of it, the nod is what they call it, the center of the sound. Then it gives you both.
I like that.
At any given time.
Yeah.
So, and then because what that does is it connects, when you connect that, you're connecting to your own sound current as well. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's the sound that's created by the mind or the voice or the unification of the two, ideally.
Yeah.
The yoga of the two.
Yeah.
Then you get everything you need therein.
So, you have a great voice.
Thank you.
It's just, I can feel it like here and here and here. Mm. I'm pointing to my forehead, to my throat and my chest.
You should come to one of my classes where I use my voice, sound and all these types of things in my classes to open up the space so people can have the experience of themselves.
All right. So maybe our listeners will have that just now anyway, while they're listening to you.
Oh, and all things that we create.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we work on ourselves, as we start to incorporate these principles, everything we create, say, do, broadcast, affects everybody, whether consciously or subconsciously.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room, but I'm never the only one in this room, especially today, because as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey.
Hey, honey. Hey, what's up? I have honey in my tea.
He does have honey.
We found some honey in the cupboard.
So today we are obviously talking to Mikel Vega.
I know. It's pretty cool.
And I'm just going to tell you a little bit about him, okay? He is Vital Warrior nonprofit founder and CEO. Mikel Vega is a Navy SEAL retired and 22-year combat veteran and professional actor. And there's more, but we'll get into that later. Mikel has walked the tough road from trauma to recovery after suffering a combat-related injury from an exploded IED that caused severe cervical trauma, ulnar nerve damage, and a mild traumatic brain injury that went untreated for many years. Whew. He only realized the extent of his injuries later when he struggled in his daily life and in his personal relationships. Through a series of healing modalities, including Kundalini yoga, that became the basis of his recovery, Mikel realized that he could help his fellow veterans and their families. Isn't that beautiful?
That is awesome.
Yeah. Mm. So, Mikel, let me just start by asking a question I ask all of our guests, which is, how do you identify?
God.
Okay. Yes.
Not the religious aspect, but the all-encompassing force of truth.
Yeah.
Is.
Okay.
Sat Nam in Kundalini yoga is truth is my identity. So
wow.
I guess Sat Nam would be.
I love that.
Yes.
Yes.
Sat Nam.
Sat Nam.
Sat Nam. Okay.
I'm taking notes.
Yeah. Write that down, hon. Thank you for that. Tell me about becoming a Navy SEAL and like, how do you qualify? What kind of mindset do you need? That kind of thing.
It's very interesting, yes, and I just helped a young man, 26, prepare for SEAL training, and he just joined the Navy and is heading that way. So, but some of the things that I told him, and if you had asked me this 10 years ago, it would be completely different, right?
Yeah.
In preparation for the SEAL teams, in the past, I would have said, make sure you can run, swim, you can endure the cold, that you have a no-quit attitude, all these times. right? Well, in actuality, training to go into the Naval Special Warfare community is 98% mental. So if you get the body prepared to baseline standards of being able to sustain the training, the rest of the work should be mental. Mm-hmm. And the highest, most effective means of preparing for that is this system that I teach. Mm-hmm. So I incorporated some of the principles that I've learned along the way of to develop true discipline, and mental disciplines within the warrior ethos is what I call Vital Warrior. Mm. And what it is, it's a martial art of and for the mind. So the more you practice it, the stronger the mind gets, the more resiliency you build, the more clarity you get of the subconscious landscape of, you know, what's going on. So instilling some of those principles would be critical in dealing with the adversity that they're going to present, mm-hmm. as you go through the training, right? Mm-hmm. When it's super cold, what are you doing? Are you focusing on what the body's doing, the body's shivering and it's cold and you can't take it and you have all these, and then the subconscious thought forms of the mind come in, well, you could have done this and you can do this. This is still there. That's there, you know, that take you away from success in your endeavor. Success in achieving the calling that you've been, that you've agreed to engage in. And that is the biggest thing. Knowing the why, mm-hmm. is going to go a long way to achieving that success. Because if you have a solid why, mm-hmm. nobody can take that away.
Really interesting. So this is actually going to come into play a little bit later, because I'm going to probably follow back to that answer that you just gave me. Because I think that it feeds into how you, your recovery, right? The way that you prepare your mind, your recovery from what you sustained while you were at war. Like if you could have prepared your mind differently, then maybe you wouldn't have had to recover the same way.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
There's a difference between what we call a warrior in modern day society, in the military mindset, and what I've experienced is in actuality to be a war fighter. A war fighter focuses on cultivating a destructive force that they can exact upon the battlefield. They're doing their training every day. It's all about, you know, violence of action, these types of things. And then in your free time, you're studying violence of action and, you know, how to be more aggressive. You're training, you're doing the jiu-jitsu, you're doing all these types of things from that perspective of being immensely effective on the battlefield, which they are. However, when they come back home and there's no more enemy, well, mm-hmm. that destructive energy remains. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is, what is happening is that we create an enemy within ourselves, and all of that destructive energy turns inward and we're destroying ourselves. That's where all the suicides are coming from. That's where all the desperation of, you know, finding purpose and all these types of things are coming from, right? That and doing that over the last 20 years, this year is the 20-year anniversary of 9/11, then that creates a very deep track of the standard operating procedures and how we go about our day-to-day life long after we've left the battlefield, right? Yeah. Yeah. What I endeavor to do is bring realization to the warrior aspect. And here's the irony of it. Let me define my version of what warrior is. For me, a warrior embodies all of the aforementioned of the destructive realm. You know, it's all a scale. It's all a scale. What's the opposite of destruction? Creation. You have destructive and you have creative. And these are superimposed on other. You're seeing where I'm taking this, right? Mm-hmm. If we don't embrace creativity in our lives, then we can never bring balance to all the destructive events that we've had. I mean, this is not synonymous or sectioned off just for battlefield purposes. This is synonymous with living in the human existence.
Right.
Okay. So if we don't embrace creativity in some form and use that and serve that, then we're never going to find balance of the destructive things that have happened in our lives. So a warrior understands the importance of that. And the irony of it is the war fighters that I've been around and those organizations, they all embody the ethos of warrior societies of the past. The irony is that they embody the destructive aspects of it, but not the spiritual aspects, not the creative aspects.
Yeah.
And all of those societies were innately spiritual, and it wasn't something they did on Sundays. It was something that was embedded in the very fabric of their existence, you know, with calligraphy and family and cultivating mm-hmm. life, the American Indian spirit, nature, earth, all these types of things, right? We, as war fighters, we admire the savagery, but we don't admire the creativity, the love that's going to balance the fear. So what I endeavor to do with Vital Warrior is to bring an understanding that the warrior rides the razor's edge in between light, dark, heaven, hell, destructive, creative, and they draw power from both. And by doing so, it doesn't make them twice as powerful. It makes them infinite. It makes them infinitely more powerful. Because it ameliorates any fear, any doubt, any lack of confidence in what it is they're engaged on and off the battlefield.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was like a sermon. That was awesome.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
I want to just talk now about while you were in Iraq. How long were you there?
On and off from 2004 to 2007.
Okay. While you were there, what was going on with your son and his mother?
My 19-year-old son.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have four children.
Right.
Right. And my oldest two children also endured this. And when you're engaged in a mission like I was, it was challenging for me to balance family, which I didn't truly understand. My dad was a SEAL, you know, mm-hmm. so I had what I had. It's not an excuse. It's just I didn't understand it. I'm starting to understand it now, but it's taken me a long time and a lot of work to get there. So I didn't understand it at the time. And as a result, you know, my children bore a lot of that weight. And then when you come back and you're not really back, that's another whole, mm-hmm. you know, multi-layered, multifaceted situation that's can get pretty adversarial. And there's no way that they can understand, and there's no way I can understand, you know. So we have to just do what we can do with what we've got at the time, and then hopefully at one point in our lives we come back together and having some understanding. But as far as my son, his mother and I separated for various reasons. And while I was away, he suffered a pretty traumatic event. Invariably, I feel that those events led to an event that occurred last year that he's no longer with us in the body. So that's a deep one right there. Yeah. One that I'm very much still processing, obviously. We're coming up on the 1-year anniversary of his death. So. Wow. I'm actually getting ready to leave and go into the jungles of Costa Rica to kind of unplug.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I know that you and I discussed this before, and I'm so sorry for the loss of him at whatever level you're choosing to look at that. And I know that you're holding him.
Here's the thing, and this is a testament to this system again. There's so much work that to be done, but there's so much work that I have done. Mm-hmm. And a testament to that work is that even with my son's death, I've been given gifts of understanding of his life. And had it not been for his death, there's certain realizations that I've had. You have to have an experience of these things. I'll do my best to articulate it, but you have to have the experience. That's what my job is as a teacher, right, is to open a space for people to have those experiences of themselves. Mm-hmm. Because that's what it is. Everybody's got a unique journey back to the singular journey.
Right. Before you tell me about that, I just want to go back a little bit, because you said that your son had this traumatic experience while he was, how old was he around then?
Six.
6 years old. Mm-hmm. You're over in Iraq at the time of this experience. So what do you do? What's your next step?
I was not in Iraq when this happened.
Where were you?
I was 2 weeks back.
You were 2 weeks
back. I had just
back.
Come back.
Okay.
So I was still very much, I was still very much in Iraq.
Yeah. Right. You're still there, but.
Yeah.
Which is what you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
It's like you come back and you're not there.
Right.
So, but you're 2 weeks back and this event happened. So what do you do to try to be helpful to your son?
Let's just say I was blessed because nobody was there when I went to collect him.
Because you were not in a good place.
I would not be sitting here right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I understand. Yeah. I understand.
So, but here's the thing. Again, 2 weeks out of Iraq, I wasn't mad. I was just going to work.
Right.
It was completely justified for me. It was some dark, dark shit that he went through. And I still don't know the full thing, but he told me a little bit, but, you know, the neighbors told me more when they heard him screaming, you know, so... I took emergency custody of my son.
Okay.
And I had just married my wife, Simona. Mm-hmm. Simona had been taking care of my son since he was in Pampers, you know. So all this is, you can extrapolate this from me and like apply it to her, because she was very much innately involved in that whole experience. So we had just got married, and I go, look, like literally a week, we're going to go on a honeymoon or something, and it was like, we can't go on a honeymoon now. So I asked her, I go, hey, we just had this thing happen, and I completely understand if you want to go hit the delete button on this marriage, but I have to take custody of my son. And she's like, of course. I was like, okay, let's go do it. And we did. And the process of trying to get custody of my son was, I mean, there were so many things going on at once, right? The event of my son, the state telling me that because I deploy, they're going to put him in a home if I deploy again. Mm. You know, because his mom's in a facility because she was, I don't want to put her stuff out there. But
she was unavailable.
She was unavailable.
Yeah.
And the state's telling me, I'll tell you a story. Mm. They go, I'm sitting there with this guardian in litem. It's a state-appointed attorney for my son. And they go, so how much were you deployed last year? And I go, 10 months. And she goes, how about the year before? And I was like, 10 months? And she's like, well, we don't see how it benefits your son if you're gone 10 months out of the year for us to give you custody. And I was like, well, after this deployment, I can be around more. And she's like, well, we have a place we can put him while you're deployed. I was like, what, like a home? And she's like, yeah. And then I go, well, what about his stepmom that's been caring for him since he was two? Because his mom was unavailable. And she's like, well, because of the language barrier, he may have problems with school and these types of things, more than when he's in a home. I was like, well, let me clear this up. Because I go downrange to serve my country,
right?
You're going to put my son in a home? And she's like, that's not what I'm saying. I was like, that's exactly what the fuck you're saying, even if you don't realize it. I go, what makes you think that I can go downrange and take life for a bunch of people that obviously don't give a fuck, and I wouldn't do 100 times more for those closest to me?
Mm-mm.
And she goes, are you threatening me? I was like, no. I was like, don't worry about my job. They'll take care of me. I'll find something. We'll be okay. And so I had to step out. We were about to deploy in 2 months, and I had to step out of that and go to the West Coast as the only thing they could find for me to be able to be home and care for him, you know.
This is the Navy.
This is the Navy. Yeah. Okay. And they took care of me. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. We did that. It's a complete, like, shift, right?
Right.
So how do you deal with that? I had all those things stacked up. Now, at the same time, this is around 2008. At the same time, I had to leave and go to the West Coast. Well, I have two empty homes in the East Coast. What else happened in 2008?
Oh,
right. Oh yeah, that inflation market, yeah. Shit.
Yeah.
That whole bubble bullshit that I got yoked by the banks. And I'm not playing the victim here. This is painting the picture so you can see.
Right, where you were.
Where I was. So, but there's a very real thing where, you know, like, my house had gone up to $300,000 from $150,000. I was like, let's sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, no, what you want to do is take the equity out, buy another property and do this, that, and that. I was like, and this is the banks. This is the Navy Federal Credit Union. This is, and I double source checked it. I was like, okay, well, these are what the financial advisors are telling me to do. I'll do it. You know, so I did.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work out so well for me and a lot of people, right?
Oh, yeah.
So there's that. And then one of the houses got destroyed while in the whole process. It was just a thing. So we moved over to San Diego, you know, started figuring things out. Took a job where I could be home and care for my son. But I was in for 20 already.
Mm.
I was already 20 years. You know, I had 2 more years left or something like that. You know, so that's like the end of my thing,
yeah.
Right? So I was like, okay, well, we'll do that. And must be time. So as I'm there, I start having these neurological things come up. Like, I couldn't sleep for 4 days at a pop. I was like, I had to get neurosurgery because of the IED blast in Iraq.
Which you didn't tell us about. So no. Tell us about that.
So during my first tour to Iraq, I had an improvised explosive device go off on my vehicle. I was in the turret and slam me against the Humvee and knock me out for a while, right? Next day, I had a whole bunch of, like, problems with my ear, and I was like, none of us put two and two together, though, right?
So wait, I'm sorry. The device went off. Your vehicle fell?
No. No. It low-ordered, meaning it didn't function properly. We kept driving.
You kept driving.
You know, it was a blast that got me.
Okay.
And so invariably, which I think it was probably an amalgamation of things, you know, then we go pretty heavy in the SEAL teams, but this kind of just pushed it over the edge.
Mm.
And it fractured, or at least they tell me it fractured my C5 and C6 is what the doctors tell me, right? And then I didn't figure it out until 5 years later.
Right.
Wow. God, you guys are tough, man.
Yeah,
why
have right?
All this pain, and why is this hurting so much?
Well, and I mean, kind of just like, yeah.
And he can just be uncomfortable for so long.
Right.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And then not sleeping for 4 days in a row.
Yeah.
Like, I'm hospitalized if that's happening.
Yeah.
That's not right. Something that I would be like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's definitely another mindset.
Well, I raised my hand. I was like, look, I can't sleep, guys. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
Like, I'm having a hard time sleeping. So they did what they knew how to do then, and they started pumping me full of pills. And then, so I was on, 13, 14 different medications at some point. And then they weren't working, so I was drinking too. You know, so that's always a great combination.
Mm. I so, always thought so.
Self-medication, man, you know.
Yeah.
But it's all too common, right? Mm-hmm. So invariably that led to an event that I had neurosurgery in 2009. So that put me on painkillers and all these other types of things. I was on amphetamines, you know, antidepressants, you know, all these different types of things.
Wow.
And it all culminated one day while I was out training some students where I like kind of went belly up because I was having a pharmaceutically induced cardiac arrest.
Ooh.
And, but here's the thing. These students came running up to me and I remember, and they're like, "Chief, you look great. Are you okay?" And I'm like, "No, I'm dying, man." They're like, "Holy shit."
You're just like, "I'm dying."
Yeah. And they're like, "What do you want us to do?" I was like, "Nothing, man."
Mm.
Nothing.
Mm.
I was just relieved. It was relief. It's like, yes.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
I do.
But I didn't. And that was the first time I had felt something, like I truly felt something in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fury. I got so angry at the people that were telling me that I needed to do X, Y, and Z, and the people that going in and talking about my problems every 2 weeks at Balboa Naval Medical Center and, like, you know, interfacing with different people every time. Mm-hmm. And just feeling like nobody really cared.
Right.
You know, they were just going, "Oh, let's, you know, study the seal or try this and try this and try this," you know. And that was my perspective at the time,
mm-hmm.
right? I was angry, very angry, lots of anger. And I revolted against that whole system. And this is where we start getting into the whole other aspect of everything. I revolted against that whole system. I started to do things that made me feel better that I had done in the past. One of which was rolfing. You know what rolfing is?
It's like scrubbing?
No
it's a deep, deep tissue type of
massage.
Yeah.
Like they take the fascia.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even call it a massage.
No, it's much
it's more like torture, but they don't ask you any questions.
And they're basically kind of pulling
that's
the
probably
muscle
why I don't know anything
of,
about it.
Off, pulling muscle off of
the fascia.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have
that. Sounds painful.
You ever crack open, you've cracked open an orange before and all mm-hmm. that white stuff holding the orange together?
Mm-hmm.
That's like fascia.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
So you have that in your muscles and it's supposed to be like a sheath that the muscle slides in. It keeps it in track and all these types of things, right? But through injury, repetitive use, and these types of things, lack of hydration, all these types of things, scar tissue can bind to the muscle so the muscle can't flex all the way or has limited range of motion. So what they do is they use their elbow, a knuckle, a tool to anchor the fascia while you flex the muscle and tear the scar tissue.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds horrible.
No, honey, you are not in line for that.
No, I don't go for pain.
It's not, but the effects afterwards are phenomenal.
Right.
Right? You release toxins. You release emotion. You release your range of motions much larger.
Mm.
You know,
interesting.
You should absolutely check it out.
I'll keep an open mind.
So I started there.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, they have kind of a different mentality around it these days.
Yeah.
You know, they're not as
intense
as they once were.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Just before you continue from there, I just want to make sure that I understand where we are in time. You are 2 years away from retiring because you're 20 years in. Is that what you said?
This was around 2010 or so.
Okay. And you've moved to San Diego so that you could be in your son's life on a day-to-day.
That was 2008.
Okay.
Yeah, the end of 2008.
And you are dealing with the trauma from all the years,
See,
right?
I never really classified it as
trauma.
I never felt traumatized.
What do you call it?
I call it a normal physiological response to abnormal conditions.
Mm-hmm.
That part
like that.
Right there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're dealing with a normal response to abnormal conditions.
Uh-huh.
The result was, for a while, that physically, biologically, you were just way out of balance, right? You couldn't sleep. Were you in pain?
Always.
Always in pain.
Mm-hmm.
You had these, the C4 and whatever they...
C5 and 6.
C5 and 6.
Yeah.
So they did the very allopathic Western medication thing of medicating you.
Mm.
Sending you to talk therapy as well, right?
Blech.
Yeah.
I see how you... That went well.
Right. But in the meantime, you're still being a dad. during this time?
That's stretching the term of dad, but yeah.
Okay, but
trying to.
Right, you're still trying to. Yes, you've provided a home.
I'm providing a home.
Yeah. Okay. And so now you're trying to take care of yourself, and now you've had this kind of shift where there maybe there's another way than the way that they're feeding you.
I haven't had the shift yet.
You haven't had the shift, but you've tried something in the past.
I had a big fuck you moment, right? Like, fuck you. I'm not coming in to do your talking bullshit anymore. Yeah. I'm not going to sit there and woe is me, woe is me. I'm going to go out and do something about this because your shit's not working, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And to be quite honest, I think I met in all the people I've worked with, I've had one go, yeah, it's working, you know, mm-hmm. what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I've had one. They right. go, yeah, I think the pills are working for me. And I'm not saying I'm anti-pill or anti-medicine or anything like that. I'm not. You know, but there's a time and place for it. And we, in 15 minutes of an interview, you're subscribing some freaking psychotropic drug on somebody's otherwise healthy brain.
Right.
You know, that's not good medicine to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a society, we're overprescribed. It's an epidemic.
It's expected.
Yeah.
So then you found Rolfing.
So I found Rolfing.
That was your first.
That was, well, I had been using that for performance reasons for a long time. Right. So I just did longer sessions of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, oh, I feel better after this. Well, from that, you know, because I didn't have the same practitioner as I did on the East Coast. So I found the West Coast is a little bit different of a nut.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So mm-hmm. it was a little more holistic, is what they were calling it. Mm-hmm. And that term to me was like, mm-hmm. what is this?
Yeah.
You know, have you ever tried yoga or have you ever tried acupuncture? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, I have not tried acupuncture.
Right.
And they go, you should try it. It may help with X, Y, and Z. And I was like, but I was in that place where I was like, who do you recommend?
Yeah.
You know, so I go, and I had a friend, you ever try this acupuncture thing, man? He goes, yeah, man, it's really awesome. He's a West Coast guy.
Mm-hmm. Really That's awesome. Your West Coast.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll try the acupuncture. Who do you go to? And go this person. And Allison Schaefer is her name. She's in San Diego. And you should look her up. She's actually really good. So, got to give back.
Yeah.
Got to give back.
Shout out to Allison Schaefer.
Taking notes.
So, I started doing that. And then I started coupling the Rolfing with that. And, of course, from the acupuncture, I look on the wall and there's this meditation and yoga thing. And I'm like, what's Bikram's yoga? What is that? I go, well, it's this room where it's really hot and challenging and really hard. And I was like, that sounds, you gotta remember the guy with the Rolfing now.
Yes.
The, you know, I'm like, let me check that out.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so I go in there and you know, you're in for a ride when, right when you walk in the room, the instructor, a little 5 foot woman, she's like, this is your first time. So your whole goal is to just not leave the room.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how long's the class?
Right.
And then she's like, an hour and a half. And I'm like, or an hour or what? I don't know. What
yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
Within 15 minutes, I'm like, I was dying.
You were dying. The Navy SEAL was dying.
The little 5 foot woman.
That little 5 foot woman killed me. There's all these other beautiful people around me. And I'm like, I don't care. Laying there on the floor, right, trying to just, I'm leaking all over the place.
Yeah. Right?
That's awesome.
I was like, that was awesome.
Right? You didn't leave, though.
I didn't leave. Yeah. Well, of course I didn't leave.
Yeah.
The gauntlet had been thrown.
Yes.
I was like, I will die in here today.
If necessary.
If necessary, I will die in here today.
Right.
With a smile on my face. But no, I kept going back. I got pretty good at it. But then I hit this place where it was like, there's got to be something else. This is like, yeah, my body feels good and everything. And I'm, you know, dealing with pain better. Pain was going away. Mm-hmm. I was starting to sleep. Then I found out about flotation therapy. Mm-hmm. You know, the sensory deprivation tanks, mm-hmm. Float Labs. Float Labs is a great place to go if you need.
Another plug.
So I started doing this thing where I'd make a whole day. Twice a week and do them all back to back.
Twice a week?
Yeah.
Wow, that's really impressive.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
So I do them all back to back. You know, I do this one, this and this and this.
Like acupuncture, rolfing.
I started sleeping deeper.
Yeah.
The stress started going away.
Yeah.
Everything started to become more focused. I started to have experiences like where I was seeing things in my like dreams while I was going through it. And I know what they are now, but I didn't at the time. It was like, whoa, these are pretty vivid. I'm going on these massive journeys, almost like.
What are they?
Visions.
Oh, they're visions.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Visions.
But for you then,
for me just then, felt like I just, dreams. I was like, what is this? You know, but they were very, they weren't just stuff that I was seeing. It was an internally generated urge to move in a specific direction. And it was like, a sense of urgency started building that you have to find someone. Like you're going to find someone. You've seen The Empire Strikes Back, right? All right.
A few times.
Yeah. So you remember the beginning where Obi-Wan Kenobi shows up, Luke's face down in the snow, and he's like, you are going to the Dagobah system, right? There you will find Yoda. Yeah. So I'm laying there, and I'm like, okay, Dagobah system, right? So fast forward a little bit, keeping that in mind, I go and I move up to Los Angeles. I get out of the military. I move up to Los Angeles with this sense of purpose. And, and I found out about this thing like meditation. I started finding out about meditation because I wanted to go and learn. I was like, man, I can learn more from my internal compass here than anybody ever showed me. And I'm learning things. But I don't know what I'm doing. Let me bring this to a science. I want to, like, who's, how do I, what's this? And then I found out about this Kundalini energy, right? Which is the energy of all, it's the source of creation and creativity that resides in us. And it teaches you how to unravel that and expand your creative experience. I was like, we're going to move to Los Angeles. Like, this is a whole nother story, but I was cast in Transformers 3.
Right.
Right? I was cast as a Coke can in the background as a special ability extra. And then, you know, there's a whole story there. But invariably, that led to me being, Michael Bay made me into a principal character in the show.
Ah, nice.
So, and that led to another thing. I was like, okay, well, let's go to Los Angeles and try to explore this.
Yeah.
And so I talked to my wife. I was like, hey, what do you think? Should we go for it? And she's like, yes. I was like, I'm not going to stop. Like, if we go for this, I'm never going to quit. It's going to be our life, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, and she's like, yep, let's go. And I was like, all right, let's go.
Well, she is ride or die, huh?
Oh, she's awesome.
Yeah.
Like and she's been there with me through all this dark, and now she's starting to get the reap. Yes. She always believed. She always believed, and she always saw that what was possible, and now it's happening. So, and now she's starting to get the the goods, you know.
So, I do want to talk about just for a minute because I was really struck by it when you told me that you was it Call of Duty that you played with him. Okay, yeah, and I want to talk about that, and then I want to talk about where you were and what you were doing when I spoke with you because you were on the set.
Yes.
Right? So can you tell me that story?
So I found out about Kundalini energy and the power it has for creativity and tried to find people to teach it in San Diego. It didn't work out so well and got weird on a lot of levels. I immediately knew, I was like, this isn't it. This isn't it, you know. So I got up to L.A., started doing some voice stuff. I'm pursuing the acting thing, and, you know, I'm working, you know, immediately working, like, right when I got here. It was fantastic. And so I meet this person, and she's like, yeah, I'm a Kundalini yoga teacher. I'm like, oh, I heard that shit before. She goes, no, you should come over to the Kundalini yoga studio. And I'm like, oh, there's a studio?
Right.
And she's like, yeah. And so I go, and Guru Jagat's the teacher. Guru Jagat owns the Rama Foundation, right? Okay. First Kundalini Yoga class. And she teaches a class, and I'm sitting there, and they play this gong, right? They play this gong at the end, and, like, the class was super challenging, And I'm a lot of breath work, and it's completely different. And I'm like, holy moly, what the? And then I sat there, and I'm laying there. They're playing this gong, and it felt like there was a lid on top of my head, and it fell open, and all this cool wind came in, right? Oh. And I'm like,
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
you're like a blob.
Yeah, oh, man. Yeah. And then somebody comes up and whispers in my ear, you're going to spread this energy across the globe. And I'm like, whoa. And nobody was there.
Ooh.
And nobody was physically there.
Right.
Right? So I go up and I'm like, whoa, I'm supercharged. I'm like, I got to learn this. I saw that there's a teacher training coming up. And I went, and she goes, you don't want to come here to do teacher training. You want to go see Huddy Jeevan. And I'm like, Yoda? And she's like, I think she may have even went like this, like with the, I think she might have even, you know what, this is not the Kundalini across, class you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, and so I did. Never met these people before in my life, right? I walk into this class, person's all dressed in white up there. I'm going, what? Turban. I'm like, what is going on, man? This is crazy, right? I'm sitting there and we do this breath of fire. We start doing it, stops, looks at me and goes, you're going to spread this energy across the globe.
Oh, stop. What?
I was like, I was like, this is it. You know what I mean? And I found it, you know,
yeah.
And found my teacher, Huddy Jeevan. So this is why I was adamant about bringing this here.
Yeah.
Because the perspective is this. That is a very long-winded way to answer your original question about my son's death.
Mm. Right.
It's necessary, though, because in order for me to impart the impact it's had on me, you have to understand the journey.
Yeah.
And the journey is this, is that because of my son's death, I gained the realization of the purpose of his life. And his purpose was to pull me out of a life of destruction into one of truth, of the power of creativity that we all hold within us, and in service to broadcasting and propagating the experience I've had in this realm of truth to others. Mm. Everybody, not just veterans, not just, you know, who we serve at Vital Warrior, but everybody. That is a testament of the power of this system under the lineage of my teacher, Huddy Jeevan, that I can see my son's death as a blessing and that of a mission of pure light.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's one that, like, ever since he ascended, it's, everything has just opened and opened and opened and opened. You know, it's just nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
Nonstop blessings.
Yes.
But I believe also that everybody has this type of experience. That's what life is the journey towards realizing the infinite within the finite and then reciprocating it back.
Mm-hmm. I believe that too, but I don't know if everybody comes to that realization.
They don't.
Yeah.
But that's the journey. That's what life can be.
Yeah.
That's the purpose.
Right.
But there's so many things vying for control and distraction. And, you know, that's where all the discipline comes in and the realizing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those blessings that me and my son share while he was here was video games. I've been playing video games since I was since video games were invented.
Right.
Pong.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Tennis for two is what it was called.
We're of that generation. It was Atari, wasn't it?
No. This was a machine that had knobs on it where the lines just went up and down.
Yeah.
It had two knobs on the machine to move the line up and down to play tennis for two. Then Atari came out later.
Yeah.
Video games have been a deep part of my life for a very long time, you know, my whole life. And so Call of Duty
a number of video games, actually. You know, World of Warcraft was one, too. But Call of Duty is really relevant because we'd play Call of Duty together. I'd be in Iraq, you know, playing back with him, you know, while he's here, you know. And I know people have a lot of different perspectives. Oh, it's violent. It's these things. It's that. And, you know, people have perspectives, which is fine. But for me, that game broke down barriers between me and my son that I don't know what else could.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in that gaming environment, you're having fun. You're connecting. That's what people don't. If you have children that are playing these games, obviously monitor them and, you know, do what you're going to do. But understand that there is a very real social connection that's happening through that game. Mm-hmm. And if you take it away from them, you might be hurting their connection.
Right.
And one of the things that happened with my son is he would game, and then he had a girlfriend that made him stop, and that's when the real problems came.
Mm.
That's when the drugs came.
I didn't know that.
That's when the, you know, all these types of things came.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he bought into the, he was like, oh, well, let me go out here and escape.
Yeah. It took away the connection.
It made a different one that led him down into a.
Right.
So, since he passed away, I was hired as a tech advisor to do some tech advising on a title that was released, Black Ops Cold War, right?
Right.
And that's in the Call of Duty franchise at Activision.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was originally just a tech advisor. Then COVID hit, you know, and some opportunities came up. And then while we were actually shooting those opportunities, I was asked to shoot some, it's funny, huh? So in the game, you have these assassinations you can do where you go up behind the player and in multiplayer and it performs an animation that gives you the kill.
Yeah.
Right? So they go, hey, would you be interested in like coming up with like 300 of these? I was like,
300 assassinations?
You're asking me to come up with 300 different ways of different weapons and to assassinate somebody from behind.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're into it.
I can do that. So that's what I did with my team. And I have a fantastic AAA talent team that's been on the Avengers and all this stuff, you know, and we crushed it, you know. So one thing led to another. I mean, while we were shooting that, my son passed away. And then the success of, I know it's all intertwined, right? You know, all these creative energies and all these types of things. And there's much deeper conversations to be had. But I fully realized that there's some forces at work here, right? Well, fast forward to today, and I am currently working all of the Call of Duty franchises.
Wow.
Every one of them.
Wow.
So I'm working 4 different video games right now at once. So
That's
think of that as shooting 4 films at one time
over
3-year period of time. So
put that
into context and running the nonprofit and, you know, a number of veterans programs that I'm teaching Kundalini Yoga and I teach in Venice. And, and then I'm a dad for my daughter and, you know, these types of things. So
amazing.
What's amazing is that in the past, I wouldn't have been able to hold all that together. There's no way.
No.
Like I can feel stability. Stuff comes up sometimes. Sometimes I still have to, I got to take a day.
Right.
You know, and just do whatever it is I'm going to do. I can feel it though. I can anticipate it. And so I can kind of turn the knobs and it's a very balanced type of thing that's going on, but it all came from the practice that I'm talking about. So
thank you for that.
Yeah. Everybody's got their experience, right?
Well,
everybody's got their experience.
Very many people have an experience like yours though.
No, and I feel like we've probably only touched the surface of.
Yeah, I fast forward through a lot of
your. Yeah.
But still just even, I mean, if you just took us through the highlights, they're so rich and so full and probably seem improbable for most people. Those things wouldn't be possible to heal yourself through other modalities, to find the blessing in your son's passing. Those things can't happen.
And then to carry it on for other warriors and soldiers.
Yes.
But here's the thing. You just said it can't happen, but it can.
Well, I know you're proof of that.
Well, not just me, but like there's a lot of great stories like that out there, you know. But if we can find truth within ourselves, invariably, that's everything. Mm-hmm. That's going to lead you on your own version of a story like this.
Yeah.
I promise.
Yeah.
Everybody's got stuff. Everybody has an experience, right? Everyone's unique. Mm-hmm. And they're just as fascinating as what I just told you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know,
they absolutely are if they...
I'm like, I don't know if they're as fascinating, but...
Well, maybe not for you.
Maybe not for me.
But if somebody told you about, you know, whatever story they had, they're going to have their version of a journey towards, if they do the work, they'll have a version of the journey towards their highest version.
It really is the genesis of this podcast, actually, is that every story connects people to... their own story. Every person's truth is familiar to another person, and it creates this bond, the human experience. Right. You know?
I'll take it one step further and say that it's that thread or the nod that I talked about of those stories that bind us all to the one truth.
Yes.
I was going to ask you what's next for you, but I know you're going to Costa Rica. But what else is next for you besides that trip?
I just booked a heavy recurring guest star on a Netflix show.
We shot one episode.
I can't tell you.
No, come on.
The stuff that I'm doing with Activision, I've talked to Activision ad nauseum about this, but the way that they are developing me and the things they're letting me do, because I just signed a contract for second unit director of Activision. Of Call of Duty.
Right.
Of That's Call of Duty.
Incredible.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
That's a big deal.
Uh-huh. To find you, where should people go?
Their best thing is Instagram now, at Mikal Vega.
Which is where I found you.
That's where you found me. That's
the one Clubhouse?
I am on Clubhouse.
Okay.
I am on Clubhouse, at Mikal Vega.
Okay. Excellent.
So.
Well, thank you so much. This was beautiful.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's lovely. Thanks for coming to the house and sharing this part of your journey, man.
Absolutely. Really Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.